WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and the New York primary is 3 weeks from today. So as more voters begin to pay attention, a lot of that money that candidates have raised is being cashed in for campaign commercials and flyers being slipped under your door or mailed to your home. So let's get your reaction to the videos and crowdsource some reporting on the flyers. If you've got any flyers from any of the New York primary candidates that you think are interesting, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Have they made you aware of a candidate you might consider who you didn't know about for any office, or surprised you positively or negatively about a candidate you thought you did know? 212-433-WNYC. And what about the campaign commercials for mayoral candidates or anyone else? The first commercial featuring Bill de Blasio's 15-year-old son Dante has drawn so much attention and critical acclaim and apparently votes for the candidate. Did you have a reaction to that or to the second Dante ad now out that's about stop and frisk? We'll play the audio of that in a minute. With anything you want to say about any flyer or commercial, call us up at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And as your calls are coming in, and to listen to some of the campaign commercials with, we have New York politics blogger, I should say Capital New York. It's the website, Capital New York politics blogger, campaign commercial watcher, and candidate mail reader, Ozzie Pabra. Hey, Ozzie, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just do a commercial crawl to start out. What do you say? And we'll talk about how the mayoral candidates are positioning themselves through their ads. Let's start with the audio of the new de Blasio spot. This is the second one to feature his 15-year-old son, Dante, whose appearance makes clear that de Blasio has a black family.
There are hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers who've never experienced stop and frisk. Shirley and I have talked to Dante many times about the fact that someday he will be stopped. Parents all over the city are having that conversation with their kids.
Bill de Blasio, the only candidate to end a stop and frisk era that targets minorities. The only one who will tax the rich to fund after-school programs that keep our kids safe. The only one.
I wish everyone could see through the eyes of every other parent. These are all our children.
Why have these ads been so effective, Ozzie?
It's because this is the first time that campaigns normally get to speak directly to voters. They spend a lot of money producing them. They spend a lot of money figuring out which 15, 20, or 30 words they're going to use. And even though candidates don't always say this directly, there's always a bit of frustration from campaigns and the candidates who say that reporters sort of focus on the wrong aspects of their campaigns. You get someone who sort of hijacks your public event, possibly with, you know, a remark that's not exactly designed to further the cause, and then you get story after story after story that you don't want in the paper, and then one of the only ways to correct it is by having your version of your campaign told through paid ads.
Right. And in this particular case, certainly a lot of people are reacting to the simple fact that they didn't realize that Bill de Blasio, who's a tall white guy, is married to a short black woman, and they have a black-looking son with this, with this fro that everybody's talking about. And so there's a racial message here, right?
Undoubtedly, it's putting his family, which looks increasingly more like the rest of New York, putting them front and center, and in a campaign where we're seeing the first the would-be first woman mayor of New York, who would also be the first openly gay mayor of New York, were running. There's also John Liu, who is an Asian American, who, if elected, would be the first Asian American. I mean, we have so many historical candidates that are running that to sort of not have that, you're almost at a disadvantage.
Right.
And one of the things
– go ahead.
The thing that really is interesting about this ad that I've heard Bill de Blasio use increasingly is the phrase that he will end the stop and frisk error. And using the word end and the idea of finality with stop and frisk, he's sort of adopting the language that John Liu has been using for quite a long time and just sort of softening it ever so slightly by not saying we're going to end the tactic, but we're going to end the era of stop and frisk. It's sort of great.
Any chance this will stop being endearing and start looking like exploitation of a kid or overly politicizing a kid now that the new ad is not just about family but about an issue, stop and frisk?
I don't think so, because it's keeping very much in line with the narrative that his family helps inform him about life in New York in a way that connects him with other voters. If this was Dante talking about, you know, real estate taxes, then I think people might be a little bit more concerned about it. But he's talking about a conversation that happens around dinner tables, and he's sort of sharing that with us in a way that makes his conversation to the public very much in line with the conversation we presumably see him having with his son. So it's not gotten to the point of being exploitive, I think.
All right. So there's a de Blasio ad with the candidate narrating. Here's a Bill Thompson ad, 30 seconds, where rather than his son, he begins by talking about his mother.
My mother was a New York City school teacher. I saw how she changed her students' lives. What would she think today? Neighborhood schools shut down, teachers not respected. It's time to stop blaming and start changing. Let's fix neighborhood schools, not close them. Let's teach for college and jobs, not just for tests. Let's give every child a great education so they can build a better life.
So we previously heard a de Blasio stop and frisk ad, now a Thompson education ad. He's got the UFT's endorsement as well as the Board of Regents Chancellor's endorsement, and pulling on dissatisfaction with Bloomberg reforms, yes?
Right, and he's also reminding people of who he is. He's the only black candidate in the race. If elected, he would be the only the second black mayor in New York City. And in his ad, it's always Bill Thompson speaking straight to camera. You never get away from him. Actually, in his ads, we've seen ads where Anthony Weiner does something very similar. He talks straight to camera for the duration of the ad, and you never get around the fact that this is the person you're presumably going to elect. Eliot Spitzer, the former governor who's running for New York City comptroller, he's taken a very different tact. He almost never speaks in his ads, and you rarely see him. You might see a photograph of him here or an old news clip with his headline over there, but you see other people. You see the people he says he is fighting for in his ads. You sort of don't get this idea that it's Eliot Spitzer, the guy whose face was plastered all over the tabloids because of the scandal that drove him from office. All you see is the name that people used to say admiringly. So it's interesting how each campaign actually uses their own candidate in their own ads.
And let's go on to a Christine Quinn ad, then an Anthony Weiner ad. They both speak themselves in these ads, to your point, and they both prominently feature the term middle class, but with different angles. Here's the Quinn ad.
Middle class and working families are the heart of New York, and they're who I fight for every day. Expanding pre-K, saving the jobs of 4,000 teachers, balancing 8 budgets that kept firehouses and libraries open while holding down taxes. Passing the living wage law, creating thousands of new tech and manufacturing jobs. Protecting tenants and preserving affordable housing. I'm Christine Quinn. While others talk about fighting for the middle class, I've been doing it.
So Quinn goes for a broad framing of her accomplishments as city council speaker for the middle class. Weiner's is more like the big powers are out to get us.
I've waged a campaign focused like a laser beam on fighting for the middle class and those struggling to make it. I've put out 2 books of new ideas, 125 of them, in fact. Everything from restoring discipline in our schools to creating a single-payer health plan for our city. Look, powerful voices have made it clear from the very beginning they didn't want me to win. But this isn't about what they want. They've gotten their way for far too long. you give me the chance, I will fight for you and your family every single day.
So, Ozzie, maybe that's the last recourse for a scandal-embattled candidate. They're out to get me, and they're out to get you, too.
Right. The only reason why the media is down on Anthony Weiner is because he's just too independent. That's his argument. And arguably, that may be the only way that he's able to spin his current circumstance and make it a viable argument for voters.
And John Liu has some radio ads that are the same content, but in English, Spanish, Creole, and Russian. Again, these are radio ads. They're audio only. Here's some of the English language version.
In the fight to take back our city, consider this the first blow. Because after 12 years of imperial edicts from City Hall, John Liu was going to start a dialogue with every corner of the city. Because he's not going to be the mayor of the 1%, but of the 100%.
And the same thing in Russian.
В борьбе за наш город – это наш первый шаг. Потому что после 12 лет императорских указов из Сити Холла наступает новая эра. Потому что Джан Лю будет мэром для каждого района, для каждой общины. Мы все хотим получать достойную зарплату.
Is he the only one doing that, Ozzie?
He might be. I think every campaign eventually will have ads in a number of different languages, but he might be the first one to go that route. He is being denied matching funds from the New York City Campaign Finance Board, so he has to be very strategic about how he uses the money he does have in the bank, and that may have led him to decide to go with radio ads, which are usually cheaper than television ads, and to spread that message into different communities.
And I think that he doesn't, I guess this is what you were getting at, he doesn't have television commercials because he can't afford them. So he's got the radio ads, and I see, I guess they all have things on their website. Those spots were not in his voice, to the point you were discussing earlier. There is a 3-minute piece on his website that's targeted to immigrants and talks about his immigrant background and how immigrants from anywhere can make it and should be empowered in New York, that is in his voice, but those were not.
Right, and it's interesting that even with the usage of tone and who you have as your announcer, you sort of convey messages as to who you want to connect with and who you want presumably to come out and vote for you. John Liu has a number of challenges facing his campaign, all stemming from the fundraising accusations. They've now denied him matching funds, so he has to choose the way in which he can get a message out to a number of his voters without as much money as his opponents.
Right.
It's going to be very interesting to watch how he does it.
And all the way on the other side of that spectrum, we have the Republican hopeful, John Catsimatidis, who's a billionaire and self-funded. And to my eye and ear, he's had more ads out than any other candidate on both radio and television. Here's one of the John Catsimatidis ads.
John Catsimatidis grew up on 135th Street in Harlem, the son of immigrants. His dad was a busboy. While working his way through college, John Catsimatidis helped save a small neighborhood store, then built one of America's most successful private businesses, creating tens of thousands of jobs. But John Catsimatidis never forgot where he came from, raising millions for education, neighborhood safety, and the human fight against disease.
So, John Catsimatidis, Horatio Alger's story. And here's a Joe Loda ad, the other prominent Republican running for that nomination. And I think this, what we're going to hear, is consistent with a major theme of his campaign. He's the grown-up who can actually do serious things.
This primary election has become embarrassing, a circus. Being mayor is a serious job, and we deserve a serious candidate. We deserve Joe Loda. Loda, the sole glimmer of hope in the mayor's race, writes the Daily News. The New York Post says Loda has the most impressive resume in the race. And the Times says Joe Loda no doubt has the management skills to put sound policies in place. Joe Loda, a leader we can be proud of.
So how do you contrast the Catsimatidis and Loda ads?
Well, the Catsimatidis is talking about his record and basically ignoring a number of his rivals. And what Loda is trying to do with significantly less resources, is turn the focus onto the Democratic candidates and say that they're the circus and he's the grown-up, and sort of remind people implicitly that he actually has a record in government that wasn't as embarrassing as some of the other people who are currently running for office. So it's a choice about how you want voters to sort of look at this election. Is it one where it's a referendum on the Democratic establishment? Or is it one where voters presumably want something similar to Michael Bloomberg, a person from the private sector who's done really well but now wants to make themselves available for public service?
My guest is Ozzie Pabra, politics blogger for Capital New York. And we've now listened to one ad, anyway, from each of the major Democratic and Republican mayoral hopefuls. Listeners, what do you think? If you've been seeing or hearing these elsewhere, and also we'll take your calls now on any of the flyers or the mailers that have been mailed to your mailbox or slipped under your door for any candidate in any race. What's interesting out there that you're seeing in front of you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's see, where are we going to start? How about Charles in Williamsburg, who wants to talk about some of the other races? Hi.
Hi there.
Charles, you're seeing flyers. This is about flyers and mailers. What are you getting?
Well, I'm happy to say that folks have been coming into my building and handing out flyers. I've seen Jason Otano, Antonio Reynoso, who I think are both good candidates.
For city council?
Well, yeah. Well, Otano is, yeah. But the main thing I wanted to say is I have a daughter who's 20 years old, and she was doing some interning for political candidates and talking about politics. I want to make a comment how terrible it is to be a young woman today and see how despicable the field is with so many folks like Vito Lopez, who represents my district and is trying to represent it again, folks like Micah Kellner in Manhattan, along with Spitzer and Wiener. It's really sad to see that's what politics has come to.
There is an unusual concentration of candidates with those particular kinds of problems this year, that's for sure. How about Bob in Queens? Bob, you don't like the de Blasio Dante ads, huh?
I'm surprised he hasn't been called on it. I mean, to me, it's shameless exploitation of a minor, you know, parading him around like, oh, look how liberal I am. I have an African-American wife. I think it's shameless. I think there's a lot more subtle ways to send that message, you know, of his views on racial equality. That's fine. But to parade a kid out there, everyone thinks it's wonderful. I mean, I like the kid's pro, too. But to me, it's shameless. Shameless.
Bob, thank you very much. Elizabeth in Washington Heights, what are you getting?
Thanks for taking my call. I got this really interesting piece from Reshma Saujani, who's running for public advocate. It's got all these circles, and you open them up, and it's a complicated piece, and I'm amazed that it managed to get through the mail. It's really a good piece. The problem is her tagline is, "It's about you," which is all in English. And then above it and below it, there are, I don't know, about 15, 16 different languages that I assume say, "It's about you." But the Yiddish...
Yeah, I've got it right here. Say tada usted.
Yeah, the Yiddish is backwards. So Yiddish is read, Yiddish and Hebrew are written the opposite way from the way English is written. If you go on Google Translate, I mean, I can actually read Hebrew and Yiddish, but I mean, I don't speak it, but I can read it. You can tell that it's backwards. The letters are...
They reversed.
Completely backwards.
So they messed it up.
And if you also look at the choice of languages that she used...
Uh-huh.
WNYC's own website that shows the top, you know, 20 languages spoken in the city,
right.
Several of the top languages aren't on this piece.
Oh, which ones?
French, Russian, and Greek.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that whoever designed this designed it not from a genuine ethnographic multicultural perspective, but from a graphic perspective to take the languages on the planet that are the most beautiful and interesting in terms of their characters.
Uh-huh.
So it's a visually appealing piece.
Yes, but not necessarily representative. Elizabeth, that's really, really interesting, an interesting analysis of this Reshma Saujani mailer. And Ozzie, I saw that flyer got written up on your website, Capital New York, as
right.
One that opens a little like a flower.
Right. It's, as Nicola described, it's a circle, and imagine it's a it's like a series of petals, and you open one and it reveals another circle, and you open that one in a different direction and it reveals another layer, and you keep peeling it back, and what you get at the end of it is a square in the middle where each side has a circle attached to it with a description of the campaign and all the campaign promises and whatnot. And the idea there in the public advocates race is not so much to inundate voters with information. That's certainly something that campaigns can do and often tend to do. This one, the general impression is to have the candidate's name be associated with something good, happy, colorful. You remember it. And in a low information race with a bunch of different candidates, when your own candidate has pretty low name recognition, just getting a voter to remember the name and get it associated with something positive, that's the goal of some of these mailers.
Let's see what other reactions we're getting to some of the campaign commercials or flyers. Dan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. The Blasio thing is very interesting because, you know, we've been thinking of them, the blacks, we, the whites, them attack us. And now with his son, this sort of realization that there's a continuum running from one group to the other. And that's very important, that muddling of that polarity, I think will be critical to surviving the city. The second thing is about Wiener. I mean, let's face it, everybody has his own proclivities and his own weird aspects. And if his wife stayed with him, is having a baby with him, maybe she's the one who could go on and say the things she likes about him. Because Wiener's peculiarity is not that different from what a lot of other people in politics do. And that his wife stays with him is because she knows he's got something to offer.
Dan, thank you very much. She got a little blowback when she did come out for him in a news conference. But let's keep going. Ian in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ian.
Yeah, good morning, Brian. One of the things about the campaign this year I noticed is that when they're doing the cold calls, they're actually being so intrusive. They're asking you, are you going to vote for my candidate? And my response is, well, my vote is my privacy. I know the issues that they, you know, they're raising, they bring up. But who are you to ask me, are you voting for?
Ian, that's a great point. And Ozzy, I have to say, I had a Quinn campaign worker come knocking at my door the other day. And I think it's the first time that it's ever happened. And that was the question. Can I count on your vote for Christine Quinn? And I guess what they're doing is to people who say, and I had the same reaction as Ian, I was going to keep my preferences or decision-making process private. But I think, and I asked him, I said, is this like the Obama campaign where once you identify who's leaning toward your candidate, then you're going to follow up to make sure that you get that person out to actually vote? And he said yes.
Right. So campaigns wage sort of a three-prong war, basically. One is through reporters where they help shape stories, plant stories, distribute information, sometimes with or without fingerprints on it. The second one is the direct mail campaign or the advertising campaign, the paid media aspect of this, where the campaigns are talking directly to voters, sometimes in a way that they prefer not to talk to other voters, and they tailor messages, and it's very targeted. And this third way is a very important way, which is when they literally go to the doors and contact voters and try to gauge, are they the people that they can count on for support? And part of that requires voters to self-identify. Yes, I will support you. No, I won't. I'm sort of thinking about it. And sometimes voters, because of the feelings that you express so well, don't want to share that with someone they do not know, even if they are supportive of the campaign. And that leads campaigns to this very tricky calculus of, should we remind voter Brian Lehr to come out? Because if we do, he may or may not vote for us, and it becomes a bit of a gamble.
By the way, I'm told from a teacher's household that the UFT is placing calls to their members, not robocalls, but real-life people, calling in and reminding them that the UFT has endorsed Bill Thompson. So that's pretty aggressive, and that shows the power of a big union endorsement, right?
Right. Having a live person speak to another live person makes a much stronger contact than when you get an automated voice message and it starts talking before you realize what's really going on. And some people just hang up when they get those automated phone calls. But when you're talking to a real person, you know, there's a greater chance of something connecting there.
All right. Well, we're out of time, and we'll come back to this kind of thing before primary day on September 10th and keep monitoring the ads and keep monitoring the flyers that people are getting for what kinds of messaging down the stretch these candidates are choosing to put out there. And we thank Ozzie Pabra, political blogger and reporter for Capital New York. Ozzie, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, separate entrances in New York City apartment buildings, depending on your income. We will look at the emerging affordable housing segregation controversy in New York City. Stay with us.